Sometimes I always feel this pressure when I'm going to preach that there has to be some new brilliant insight for it to have been a good sermon. And this is not one of those days. What we're going to see today in this passage, we all know. And we've all felt it very, very deeply. What we need today is to be reminded of these truths. And I want to begin with a story that's one of the most chilling stories I've ever heard. I heard a pastor share this about 15 years ago, and it has haunted me. And it's not the chilling story that scares you as much as it brings kind of waves of fear and embarrassment, and you can feel it in the pit of your stomach. And his story that he shared goes like this. He, as a pastor, had one of the other church leaders in his office with him, and they were talking about ministry, and they decided they needed to make a call to one of the other church leaders' wives about a ministry that she was involved in. And there were no problems, there weren't issues, there was no hostility, no tension. They just needed to call her to talk about ministry. And so they did, and the phone rang several times, and she didn't answer. And so he hung up the phone on his desk, and then they kept talking. Only the next comments they made were not very kind about the woman they had just tried to call. There was some sarcasm and some joke and a little put-down humor and some negative comments about her and the challenge of working with her. And they went back and forth for a couple minutes, and then they heard it. A click and a dial tone. Okay, now those of you young enough to not know what a dial tone is, it's the beep that said the phone call just ended, which means everything they had just said had been recorded on her answering machine. Let that sink in for a minute. This pastor, as he was speaking, commented that immediately in his mind, it flashed to what unfolded for the next several weeks. The conversation with that wife, apologizing for such insensitive and unkind words. And more than that, having to admit that the only reason they would ever make those kind of put-down comments were because of their own pride. And the way when we put other people down or joke or tease about them even, or serious comments, it's really a way of making us feel better about ourselves and feel more like we're an inside crowd with people we're talking with. But then another conversation with the church leader, the husband of this wife, where he had to apologize for the hurt and not knowing what kind of tension it may have caused in the home and the frustration or the disappointment and what impact it would have had on them. And then the discouragement that it could be for her in her ministry, whether or not she's going to continue in ministry, or whether she's much more reluctant to speak up or share ideas, always wondering what, you know, the pastor and other church leaders really think, or the ways that the husband might now be much less likely to trust the pastor, how he's going to hold back on his thoughts, not knowing how it's going to be talked about, or times where in future leadership meetings there's disagreements and things going on, and it's really they don't disagree about that, but they're still hurt by what was spoken of even weeks or months before. Or the ways it's not just saying negative things, but the things they withhold. That is, he has a great idea, or he needs to really confront another idea and challenge it, but he won't speak up, because he doesn't know how they're going to talk about him when he's not in the room. Understand the challenge and the power of our words. And James today is going to unpack this for us. And as we do this, I think maybe you've already had some situations come in your mind. And that's why I kind of apologize in advance that it could be a painful message. But hopefully on the other side, it's a good reminder for us as the positive ways words can have an impact as well. So let me start by giving you just a quick overview of what's ahead. We're first going to take a look at the fact that words matter, and words are very important to us. We're also going to look at the fact that words have great power, the reality that those words have more power than we often imagine. Often we underestimate how significant our words can be for other people, and that our words then have to be controlled. For a true believer, for genuine faith to be worked out, it's going to demand that there's self-control in words, which is going to relate back significantly to our heart. So let's just move through these thoughts with James as he shares them with us. And we're going to start in James 3, 1 and 2. Let's just hear again what we just read together. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his own body. This perfect man, or the word there involves being complete or fulfilled or coming to fruition. It's really interesting that as we heard Chris preach last week about faith and works and the relationship between them, that genuine faith, real faith, works itself out. If genuine faith isn't demonstrated in true works, then that faith is dead. And with that, it basically said, James said, that that faith would come to fruition or fulfillment or completion by the works. With that being the case, and that being kind of the central theme we've built towards, now bouncing off of, where does James go first? The first place he talks about our works evidencing genuine faith is to the tongue and the way we use our words. He starts with this challenge to teachers, that not many should become teachers. Now, for their community and their day, being a teacher was a highly esteemed role. James highlights, I think, the importance of this role and the fact that because of the importance of that role, there's a greater judgment for those teachers because of the impact that their words can have on other people and the impact that their words can have on the church body as a whole. Encouragement, setting direction, setting hope, casting vision, discouraging, causing division. There's power in those words. And so it was a caution to these people who wanted their voice to be heard, but maybe they weren't qualified or didn't recognize the responsibility that it involved. They wanted the prestige, they wanted the position, but they didn't want the responsibility. It seems in the first century there were opportunities for people to speak up and engage conversation. If you look at 1 Corinthians 14, it seems that even during the services, when they were together, people would speak up, this idea of them wanting to be involved with teaching. So there was a desire for certain people to be heard and to be recognized. And James cautions here that there should be an honest hesitance, a humble recognition that not everyone should be in that role as teacher. That is, just because a person wants to be heard doesn't mean they have something to say. It's the haunting conversation I had as I was finishing my doctoral program, and I talked to someone at a school up in Chicago, and they had an open position. We were just chatting about it, and as we were talking about teaching and my goals for teaching and those kind of things, he just stopped, simply looked me in the eye and said, "But do you have anything to say?" And it was a helpful caution and a good reminder. So James here is not correcting false teachers as much as he's warning those who have a desire to be teachers. There is great responsibility, and with great responsibility comes great judgment. Paul warns in 1 Timothy that certain persons, by swerving from these, have wandered away into vain discussion, desiring to be teachers of the law without understanding either what they are saying or the things about which they make confident assertions. He begins, focused on teachers, saying words really matter. They're critically important, even when it doesn't feel like it. And I have to tell you, this is something that I battle personally, because people will often say to me, "Hey, how was your day at work?" And I go, "Well, I talked a lot." But there's nothing to show for it. And you feel like you've talked a lot, but you go, "Has there really been any benefit?" You don't see anything tangible for your work. There's nothing to make me feel like I've had a productive day in those conversations. And honestly, it's why at times I've so enjoyed remodeling projects around the house, or building furniture, or building anything, right? Or landscaping, because when you're done, you can say, "I did that," right? And there's something to show for it. Our words often don't work that way, and for me as a teacher, words are the tools of my trade. I work in words. There are a lot of days where it just feels like you've been talking and it's not productive. But I've been at this long enough now, teaching over 26 years now, where I have this conversation with a former student who says, "I remember when you said," or how my words led them to a certain decision or shaped their faith. It's the student I was talking to, a former student who had been in ministry about 10 years. And as we got talking, I was interviewing him about some research I was doing, and as we were talking, he said, "Before you start, I need to share with you." And he went back to a conversation I had with him when he had turned in a paper that he had worked together with someone else, a little closer than I thought they should have. And as we talked, I just said, "You got to understand, this issue is not about this grade. This issue is about you in ministry. and what it means to be functioning in ministry with integrity. He said to me, I still think about that conversation when I'm starting meetings or when I'm going to sit down and talk to people. Now, I have to be honest and say there's times where I have students say, do you remember when you said to me? And I have to go, do I remember having you as a student? There's been just so many at this point. But even that reminds me how important our words are to people who are listening. And then when I stop and think about it, the times that I've hung on the words of teachers or pastors or even books I'm reading, they don't even realize I'm listening, but they're impacting me. Our words are important, so important that James says, you really need to be careful about whether you should be teaching because your words have great power, and those words will bring greater judgment or stricter judgment. But it's not here only the teachers that I think he's applying this to. Notice how he says, for we all stumble in many ways. I think here he's broadening this application to everyone. It's parents whose children long to hear certain words from them. It's the book I read many years ago called The Blessing, and the one thought out of that book that just always stuck with me is that children desperately, desperately need to hear from their parents, I'm proud of you, and I love you. And we all know, those of us who heard those as kids or those of us who didn't, how much impact that had. And as parents, I think at times we can get so busy and consumed with many other things that we lose sight of how important our words are to our kids. Or it's friends who are desperate to hear that they're accepted and they're valued. It's coworkers, it's church family, it's neighbors who long to hear words of encouragement, words of hope, words of forgiveness, words of instruction, words of guidance. Our words matter. All of us, all of our words, every day, in every situation, our words are important. And we're then accountable for our words because of that power. And those can be the words we speak or the words we write and the words we put out in social media. Notice how Jesus emphasized this. When he said, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word that they speak. Or again, addressing specifically the religious leaders, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and love greetings in the marketplaces and the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts, who devour widows' houses and, for a pretense, make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation. Even leading in worship, even in their public prayers, those words were hollow and deceptive and led people in the wrong direction. Our words matter. Now, let me set just a couple perspectives as we continue on in this passage. First, would just suggest as we've been moving through James together that this is a trial or a test that are faced by every one of us. Now, Chris, again, carefully laid out the fact last week, and we've been looking at it in sermons before, that when we talk about trials or tests, we immediately tend to think of suffering or kind of a painful experience in our life. But as James is moving through this, those trials or tests are the kind of situations we face in life, which are going to do two things. They're going to reveal what's inside by what comes out. This is where last week he talked about genuine faith producing genuine works. But they also are opportunities for us to grow in our faith, to grow in the way we live, to come to know God more. It's a test that we all face. Why? Because we all are communicating every day. James tells us that our life situations are a test or a trial that both reveals what's in our heart and also has the potential to shape our heart as well. But I would also add that this ultimately is a matter of the heart. I fear sometimes that when we start talking about our tongue, we kind of make a list of words we shouldn't say, and we're careful not to say things there, but the reality is we had the conversation in our head a whole lot of times, right? We were thinking it already. Notice what Jesus says. How can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What's in the heart overflows. The good person out of his good treasure brings forth good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words, you will be condemned. We can't just talk about the issue of controlling what we say. We have to talk about the source and where it comes from, or those words eventually are going to come out. Notice then how James picks this theme up as he's gone through his book. We've already looked at several of these. In chapter 1, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear and slow to speak." And the reality is, how many times would we not say something if we would pause and think for just a second before we did? Or if we paused and asked the question first to clarify things before we react and speak quickly? He continues, "If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his heart. This person's religion is worthless." And then the challenge we saw last week, "So speak and so act as those who are to be judged under the law of liberty." So one commentator puts it this way simply, "A man's words are the revelation of his inner character. As the organ of speech, a man's use of his tongue provides a ready revelation of his inner nature, for out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. The power of speech is one of God's greatest gifts to men, and believers must be on the constant guard against the perverted use of this mighty gift." So catch here, the issue is not just limiting the words we shouldn't speak. If you're already thinking it in your head, if you're wanting to say it in your heart, it's still a problem. So it's important that we're going to talk about self-control and limiting the way we say things, but the more important thing is developing the kind of hearts that would want to speak words that are kind and truthful and gentle and supportive and encouraging. Go back to the opening illustration I mentioned where those words were all recorded, and think of it this way. It's not just the question of what if my words were recorded and everyone was going to hear that, but instead, what if my thoughts were recorded and my thoughts were actually played out loud? At this point, James continues and tells us why this is so important. We've introduced the fact that our words matter, but ultimately, James says, words have great power. And he gives a couple illustrations of this. And listen again from verses 3 through 6. "If we put bits in the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide our whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and driven by strong winds, they're guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell." Finish the simple rhyme we've all heard. "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but..." And James says, hogwash. We know how much words can hurt, or words can help. How many conversations do you already in your mind right now go on? You're thinking about these conversations you've had as we start talking about these things. They could have been long talks. They could be just brief passing comments. They could have been from last week, or they could have been from decades ago. Words have great power. And then he uses a couple illustrations to show how something very small can do something very large. Excuse me a second. Okay, I just changed the temperature of my home. I opened my Nest and said the air conditioning is set on an ecosystem, it's going to be too hot when we get home, and so with the movement of my thumb, I turned on the air conditioning. Do you realize what happened? This little thumb, from here, 25 minutes away, will alter the temperature of my entire home and make my pets much more comfortable. My dog and cat will have a better morning for that. Something very small, having great impact. Or the fact that when we're driving here, Amy was driving this morning, and she's driving the truck, I've entrusted her with a couple tons of metal, doing 70 miles an hour, right? Which is controlled with a steering wheel that weighs a couple pounds. And a little flick of the wrist takes something massive and powerful and something that can be very good by getting us here to church, or something that could be very destructive without care, something very small controlling something very big and having a huge impact. And James gives a couple of examples that they would have related to much better than pickup trucks, right? It's bits with horses. And I have never been real fond of horses. When I was young, I was thrown off a horse. They just always have intimidated me. They're beautiful from a distance. They're bigger than I am. They're stronger than I am. They have minds of their own. Why would I want to get on them? But I understand the people who do work with horses and that, it's this small piece of metal put in their mouth that provides a point of control, where something huge and powerful and strong, that energy can be harnessed in a positive direction and produce work or let you move. Or the rudder on a ship and starting small. I would love in a canoe, if Amy and I were in a canoe with the two of us and both of our packs, 100 plus pounds on the packs and that, as we're paddling along or moving down the river, all I had to do is take the paddle in the back because I was always steering, and all I had to do is change the angle a couple inches, like this in the water. Move it down a little in the water, angle it slightly, and the entire canoe, just like this. Well, his example goes much bigger when he talks about fish, large boats or vessels, which, and I looked up, could be up to a few hundred tons in their day. Amazingly, today, apparently, we have freighters of upwards of 200,000 tons. Something very small can take all of that great power and direct it towards something very positive. Understand his point. Words can have a huge impact. They can guide you through the Suez Canal. No, sorry. That also shows the danger, right? And the warnings of those who, anyways. Words have incredible power. So, and think about this. Do you remember the situation and the emotions when you heard someone say, I love you? When you heard someone say, I am proud of you? And you heard someone say, you encouraged me. Or God loves you. God cares for you. I'm listening to you. I'm here to help you. I'm excited for you. You're not alone. You're not the only one struggling with this. Congratulations. What a great job. Do you remember the times when you've had someone speak those kind of words into your life? I'm going to pause and give you a couple minutes to jot down a couple of those examples. Get them in your head very clearly and take a minute and think about someone who spoke those words that powerfully impacted you and jot them down. You're allowed to stop looking at me. Take a minute and jot down just a couple of those examples. And hear me, I'm pausing to do this because I know it's easy to move through these concepts and go, yeah, that's true, but I want this to get personal for all of us. I flash back for me. I had a professor in seminary who I very highly respected. I was terrified going into seminary because I was a math major, and in that day, we didn't emphasize writing across the curriculum, and so I didn't write hardly at all. And then I went to a seminary where I had to write a lot, and I was scared. I remember my first year in seminary, towards the end of the year, when that professor made just a small comment at the end of a paper. He was the kind that gave you almost no feedback. He'd just give you a grade at the end, and it was disgusting because his grade was usually accurate. You go, okay, that's fair. But he just wouldn't give a lot of feedback. But he made this one little comment about my writing that was just a word of encouragement from him. I tell you, for 25 years, I could pull that paper out of my file and go back to it. And it changed the way I thought about myself as a student and in terms of church ministry and work I do. It gave me a confidence to try things I wouldn't have had otherwise. One little phrase changed a direction for me. And I'm going to give you a couple minutes, to the degree you're comfortable, to just turn to people around you and say, here's someone who spoke a word of encouragement in my life, or here's someone who spoke to me and this is how it impacted me. To the degree you're comfortable, take just a minute and share that with the people around you. Okay? Okay, now again, I just want us to be reminded of the great power of our words and the fact that in a church service in the middle of a sermon, you're all ready to keep talking about it. And you know what it's like when you hear those words. God has given us this tool very powerfully to impact other people with words of truth and words of hope and words of help and words of health. And I just find often, in practical ways, many of us don't say those things because we feel like, well, they don't care. Lots of other people are talking to them. Do my words matter? And we tend to withhold what may be the most powerful tool God has given us, the words we can speak to others. But James here gives two examples of very positive words, but he gives a third example as well. And it is not positive. It's the exact opposite. That is a small spark setting on fire a great forest. The great danger of our words as well. I appreciated Daniel Ackerman, who puts together our study guides for the small groups, and I really appreciated what you did this week for the study guide with this. He made a list of negative types of words in Scripture, the words we're kind of trying to avoid, and he included things like slanderous, deceitful, lying, filthy or unwholesome, foolish, crude joking, harsh, quarrelsome or divisive, bitter, gossiping, and even hearing those words, we know the damage that they can do. Words can bring discouragement or heartbreak. Words that cause anger to well up within us or to make us defensive. Words that can make us give up or quit. Words that can make us run away. Words that just keep us from trying. Words that control our hearts for years or decades. Words can set a community into rage. Words can start riots. Words can create family feuds. Words can send nations into war. And false teaching, an unbiblical approach to life, doctrinal error, can destroy lives and condemn people to hell for eternity. And it's a scary phrase here when he says, setting on fire the entire course of life and set on fire by hell. You hear the picture? Our words have the potential to give people a taste of hell here on earth. We cannot overlook the great danger of our words. Satan himself, a liar, a deceiver, a slanderer, loves for that kind of speech to run rampant, and too often we see it even in the church. This important message for us that our words are powerful with the potential for great impact for health and healing and strength and encouragement and growth, or they can devastate people. Proverbs goes through this in several different ways, and I'm just going to give you a few examples very quickly. Trent will actually be speaking next week again about our speech and on communication. It's an important enough topic. We thought 2 weeks for us to think about this and think about it together over the week. But notice just a few proverbs that give this picture. A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Or, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Or, with patience a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue will break a bone. Sticks and stones aren't the only things that can break bones, apparently. Or, a soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stir up anger. Or, gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. Or, my favorite, whoever gives an honest answer kisses the lips. One paraphrase of this says, an honest answer is like a warm hug. Proverbs reminds us simply of the power of our words, and James echoes here that we need to take that seriously, teachers especially, but everyone, because our words have great power, potential for good or damage if reckless. Which leads us to his point, that words then have to be controlled. For every kind of beast and bird, reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. The tongue is wilder and harder to tame than wild beasts. His idea here is the importance of subjugating it or putting it under control for a purpose that would be positive and benefit. It's a restless evil. The tongue is fickle and inconsistent. The tongue can't be trusted to stay in its place. We cannot assume the tongue will automatically say the right thing, the right way, at the right time, with the right tone, which is how in the past we've defined love. It's full of poison. The potential reality is it can be a source of blessing, and it can also, though, be a source of cursing. The highest good is blessing God, to speak well of God, to celebrate God with words of adoration and praise. But then amazingly, the tongue can turn around and speak evil of God's creation here on earth to represent him. The obvious challenge here, he stated these as though the answers are very obvious, right? Can this happen? No. It's in modern vernacular, he would ask, is the Pope Catholic? Is the sky blue? Will the Browns ever? I'm sorry. Does a spring bring forth good and bad water? Can a tree produce another kind of fruit? No, it ought not to be. And here the term for ought is just it fits naturally, it grows out of. And that is a spring naturally produces one kind of water, a tree produces one kind of fruit. We should have words that are fitting for hearts that are lined up with Jesus Christ as his followers. We should have words as works that are fitting for genuine faith. Can those things be the case? No, and similarly, that should never be the case for our tongues. It points us back to the source, the water flowing out of the spring, the fruit coming out of the tree, words coming out of our hearts, the natural overflow of faith. Faith works here equals faith words. Faith produces faith words. Just the final emphasis of this again goes back to the words of Jesus. Jesus warns us about our words here in the Sermon on the Mount. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to the judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And to whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. It's interesting here that phrase, you fool, is translated, here's you fool, in many other translations, like in the New International Version, in the King James Version, they don't translate it as you fool, they actually give the word raka, which was always kind of confusing, but it's actually an Aramaic term that was so hard to translate that they just left it sounding that way. And it's because it isn't so much a word of you fool, but it's a sound or a tone of contempt. It's like someone who hisses between their teeth, or someone who just has this kind of angry growl. That's the tone communicated. And so when he says, when that's what's in your heart, there's great danger of the judgment of hell. James has told us very clearly, our words have great significance. Why? Because our words matter. They have an impact on other people and on our future judgment. Why? Because words have great power, for good or for evil. So our words must be controlled. And this is something that we all face, every one of us. And it's ultimately a matter of our heart that drives us back to that. So let me, in our last couple minutes, make some practical suggestions for the week ahead. First, a word to teachers. Those who teach ABFs, those of us on the preaching team or others who would preach, those leading a small group, those involved in children's ministries, at whatever level we're involved in teaching, we need to recognize the seriousness of our tasks, the importance of the words that we speak, the potential impact on those we teach, which makes us careful about words that could hurt, but also makes us recognize the great, powerful way that God could use us to impact people for the gospel as we teach his word. For all of us who teach, and I would say that same truth extends to those who are parents and those who are in roles where they have others that they're influenced by. Words have great potential and must be taken very seriously. Which leads to the suggestion that it would be good for all of us to weigh our words. Take the issue very seriously. Get rid of the phrase, "Oh, just saying." There's no such thing. You said it. It's going to have an impact, right? And follow the pattern of James. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. And so here's the challenge for this week. I would just encourage you, just to think about this, I would encourage you to journal for the next several days your words. Now, I know you're not going to record them all. That wouldn't be expected. But just keep the journal at hand, or at the end of the day, jot down a couple of the things you said that were like, these are trophies of the day. I caught it at the right moment. I said exactly the right thing, and I can see it's going to have the impact. Jot down a couple things where you go, that's the way I want to be talking. But also jot down a couple of the phrases or the conversations you wish you could take back, the ones where you should have held back, you should have listened more, you should have waited to give some time to calm down, the words that you know came out quickly and hurt them, you wish you could take them back. Simply each day jot down a couple of the highs and a couple of the lows of your speech. And if you do that till Friday, then on Saturday, just take a minute and review those things. Look over them and think about the pattern of your speech and where you are and review that. And those can be, again, parents on the sidelines watching your kids compete, students at the lunch table, hanging out with friends, parents, children, whatever. Just keep track and kind of monitor this week what your speech is like and review that on Saturday. And again, next week, Trent's message will continue on and give us some more guidance in the use of our tongue that I think could be helpful. As you do that, keep a check on your heart. Words ultimately show what you really believe. What you think, what you feel comes out in your words. It's interesting, James, as he's talking about the importance of speech, has linked this closely with thinking rightly about people. In chapter 1, he said to care for the widows and the orphans, that is, show great respect to those who can give nothing in return and care for them. In chapter 2, he said, don't just show favoritism to the rich, but show it to the poor as well. Treat everyone with respect. Here in chapter 3, treat everyone as people created in the image of God. And he's linked their speech all the way through. We've seen repeatedly in James already. So think well about other people. But I would just suggest, learn to ask this question. Where did that come from? You know the time when you're in a conversation and these harsh words are there and you're fighting not to say them? Don't just walk away going, oh boy, I did good, I didn't say it. Walk away saying, where did that come from? Was it because I was jealous? Was it because I was angry? Was it because I was afraid? Was it because I was being selfish? Was it from my pride? Make your words the means to drive you back to examine your heart. And I would encourage, even as you're journaling this week, when you have these moments where you go, oh, I wish I could take that back, or why was I so cruel with what I said to them? Ask yourself, where did that come from? And I think it'll help us monitor not just the words, like we're trying to control something out here, but actually go back to the source and take a look at the heart. Fourth, be intentionally constructive. Work this week and in the weeks ahead to speak the positive things that need to be said. Let me just say, part of the tendency is being sure we don't keep putting the wrong words in our minds. Just all of us. Any derogatory terms in our vocabulary, the kind of labels or derogatory terms we use for other people, whether it's based on race or gender or age or social status or any other category, get rid of them. Don't let them be in your mind and don't speak them. And honestly, for some, that means you need to go back and look at your playlist and get rid of some songs that use terms that just don't speak well of other people. Get that kind of thinking out of our head. But at the same time, speak the positive words. The number of times, we've all had this experience, right? You don't know if they care or it's a neighbor and do they know you very well and this and but when you finally speak it and you have people go, thank you so much, that is so helpful. We tend to hold back and restrain from speaking the words that can bring health and healing and hope and encouragement and truth. Work to speak positively. And finally, just work to live with a click voice message mentality. As you're talking, ask your question. If those words were recorded for this other person to hear, would they be positive? Would they help our relationship or would they hurt? Would they encourage them or would they destroy them? And I gotta say, as I've thought through this message these last few weeks, that illustration keeps coming back to my mind. So that I've had these conversations even over the last couple weeks where I'm talking to someone and I stop and say, if that person I'm talking about was in this room with me, would I say it the same way? And if not, why not? We all know we talk differently when we're talking face-to-face with people, right? Learn to live with that mentality that our words are important and the words that are unspoken are important too. Again, as we look through James, this is not a way for us to earn favor with God. It's instead a natural way of wisdom. It's a life that grows out of a genuine faith in Jesus Christ, which adheres to the law of liberty, the law that frees us to bless others with our words, words that can bring healing and comfort and encouragement and hope, and especially as we speak the truth of Jesus Christ and the truth of the gospel. May this help all of us this week, and may this help us be the kind of family that follows these words and recognizes the power of our words and speak words of hope and truth and healing to each other. Let me close our time in prayer. Our Lord, we simply pray with the psalmist. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer.